Hi, this is Jackie Tantillo, host of this podcast, Should Have Listened to My Mother. I want to thank you all for listening. I really appreciate all of your comments and feedback, all your shares and your subscriptions. There are lots of messages to be shared, all these stories of these moms and what they experienced and what they are experiencing today. It is obviously somewhat different from generations ago, but the stress, the pressure, the love, the joy, it's all there. And it's great that we keep talking about it. I wanted to also take a look back this week, back to episode one, which is called Education, 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 a topic that was as important then as it is today. My guests are Joan Hamburg and Christopher Nomura, two talented professionals that couldn't be more different, and yet it's interesting, their mothers had the same message, the significance of a good education, apply yourself, be somebody, make a difference in the world. And if you think you have a compelling story to share about your mother, you want to be part of the conversation, you can email me at jackie@shouldhavelistenedtomymother.com. You have to write out the whole name, jackie@shouldhavelistenedtomymother.com. And you can also check out the Should Have Listened to My Mother Facebook and Instagram pages. Hello and welcome to the very first ever Should Have Listened to My Mother podcast. I am your host, Jackie Tantillo, and I have a very special guest with me. I actually get to sit and talk with Joan Hamburg, a radio fame, New York fame, for WOR Radio for many, many years. And now we share a studio together here at WABC.
A nice studio. With a window. With a luxury. Window.
We share a studio together at WABC one day a week. So Joan has been kind enough to sit with me for a couple of minutes as we explore our topic of should have listened to my mother and the kind of influences that our moms had or didn't have on our lives. And thank you again for taking the time. You are an iconic symbol for New York. You have won many awards. You are a mom, and I remember growing up listening to you in our household, inspiring me to get into the business as well. You were a career woman when not so many women were. You tell me, should you have listened to your mother? Did you listen to your mother?
You know, I was very lucky, Jackie. I had a very unusual mother. I grew up in an area called the Five Towns. Mm-hmm. They were literally five towns. And when I was a child, they were little towns. They were still country-ish. You know, now, of course, they're very suburban. And like everything else, they've changed dramatically. But I had a mom. We were a very large, close family. My grandfather lived with us. Every night, all the relatives would come over and have dinner, and if not dinner, dessert. It was a never-ending feeding frenzy. Mm-hmm. And their excuse was, we want to visit Papa. So I grew up surrounded by this family, and they would expect us to entertain or recite. You'd finish your dinner, and my favorite bit was, we had a lot of stairs in our home, and I would always do a bit from The Little Foxes. That was my favorite. And all the relatives would clap because they knew their reward would be chocolate malteds or sweets or whatever my mother was making. My mom, for someone of her generation, was, do not waste your education. And when I grew up, the most important education was to get married and have children. But that wasn't in my house. In my house, it was be someone. Take advantage. You can get married. And of course, we want that. But more important, make a difference in the world and do something that has meaning, that you like. So she really pushed, which was extraordinary. And of course, I loved it. You know, I went to Barnard College when the message was that message. We expect you to do something. Don't just settle into being a housewife. There's nothing wrong with that. But their message was, pushing my mother's message.
That's wonderful. I think your mother and my mom, Linda, were sisters.
Yeah, very unusual.
Because I'm the youngest of seven, and she believed in we were able to do anything we wanted to do. She was very smart. She was a homemaker, but she spoke four languages. She would teach herself French at night.
She had seven children.
And seven kids, yeah. So we grew up in Long Island as well, in Garden City.
You're kidding. A great place to grow up. We used to go to the Garden City
Hotel.
Oh, it's
beautiful.
For lunch and brunch and whatever.
When it was the old hotel.
Yeah, when it was the old hotel. So are most of your siblings career women or men?
They all are. We all are, yeah. All pretty much in the arts, whether it's animation or architecture or fine art or teaching teachers how to teach art.
Lucky, right?
Yeah, there's six girls and one boy.
Oh, that's great.
So
they were so excited. Your poor brother, although it was great to be your brother, I can imagine.
He got off so easy. Got off very easy, but it was wonderful. And the fact that I'm sitting here again chatting with you is phenomenal. She actually, my mom had sent, when John Minnelli was the program director here many years ago, she sent my headshot and cassette, my demo.
She was so smart.
Wanted to get me a job.
I know. Did it work?
Well, no, but Rosemary, who was the assistant at the time, she must have been the one opening up the envelope. And I started here 20 years ago this fall. I'll be here 20 years.
Unbelievable.
It's pretty phenomenal.
How things happen.
Yeah, but she got me into radio because the radio was on all the time.
Well, that was my mom, too. She used to have radios in every room of the house. And at night when she couldn't sleep, she would listen to Barry Gray. In the early days,
WMCA.
And he used to broadcast from hotels too, which became popular and then sort of faded out. Not too many people are doing that anymore.
Right. But you yourself are also considered, I think, I don't know if it was your daughter who wrote in Huffington Post, that you're considered a mom of many of your listeners because you are so endearing and so passionate about not only your guests, but your sponsors, which when sponsors are really part of a family, I think, very different from what the radio business is now.
Exactly. Well, listen, the whole world has changed. And whenever I give a speech or talk to young people, like, how do you survive? You survive by learning to write new on the package. Because the world is changing. If I didn't learn to become a little tech, forget it. Because that's the voice, the language, the communication skill. So it's really reinventing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we all did. You know, when I was a kid, I used to write copy for ad agencies like BBDO, some of the big ones. Right. And that's where I learned the cereal doesn't change. It's on the box when they say new. And
that's
constantly new, no matter how long we've been doing this, how many years, it's right new on the box.
Yeah.
The audience is still there. But you have to change a little bit of the direction. If someone even 5 years ago had said to us, streaming, digital, podcasts, we would look at them like they were from Mars.
Well, yes, absolutely.
But, you know, it's the way we communicate now.
Absolutely. And it's important because if you don't become that tech savvy, you have to, right? Because the younger people are doing it. Not only younger people, we are doing it.
Everyone is doing it. The only difference is we need a little more help.
Yeah.
I need my own live-in consultant. You know, my daughter tells the story of how she gets a phone call from her dad recently, and he says, Lizzie, a crisis. And she thought, oh no, what could happen? A nervous wreck. And he says, Alexa's gone. And she says, what are you talking about? She's gone. I keep asking her, what's the weather? And no one answers. And
helpless.
She said she cracked up. It was, and Saturday Night Live does a similar thing on technology.
Right. What was it like for Lex, Lizzie, and your son, John? You were working a lot. I always envisioned by the way, I always envisioned you when I was listening to you, that you were in your living room or in your an office or your home broadcasting, which wasn't even thought of then, really. It was so magical listening to you, and it was like you had to have your pen and paper the radio, because you were always giving out these wonderful tips of where to go and
we
where
still
to
do,
eat.
By
you
the
still
way,
do.
And we still do on our
you
podcast.
Do.
We
That's
give
right.
out
ABC
where to go, what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, when the children were young, it was not so easy for them because I worked a lot.
Yeah.
And in those days, we were doing 6 days a week, and then it was just too much. So. And I was doing TV with it, too. So we switched to 5 days a week. And what do you talk about? 2 hours a day, every day of the week. I never wanted to do hard politics.
Right.
And I, like you, love information, wanted to share things, share the joy of theater, of wonderful restaurants, of excursions and travel. And I had to learn to use my family as caricatures because... what are you going to do? I didn't want to, you know, expose
them.
But they hated it.
They did. It was hard because they didn't know their mom.
They didn't like people coming over to them. And Jackie, I've told the story because it's so true. Lizzie was living, our daughter, in Japan. And she sends me a note saying that she was going to go backpacking in Bangkok. She was just a kid. She was 17 years old or 18. And I mentioned on the air, you know, gosh, my daughter's going backpacking in Bangkok. I'm a nervous wreck. She's been living with a family in Japan. And I get a call from a woman who says, I'm a nurse. I think she was at New York Cornell. And I am Thai, and I'm from Bangkok. My family would like to entertain her. So I say back to the woman, how nice, you know, but I said, if you have children, you know that I can't tell my kid that. Oh, she's not going to do that. I don't even know when she's arriving. So I never heard from that woman again.
Mm.
My daughter calls me at one point weeks later. I said, where are you? She said, oh, I'm in Bangkok with people who found. I said, you're crazy. What is this? She said, I got off the plane from Tokyo, and there was a very large guy wearing like a chauffeur's livery uniform, and he had a big sign with my name on it. Did you tell? I said,
oh,
of course I didn't. I didn't even know when you were going. Anyway, they looked her up. They found her, God knows how.
They went and got her at the
airport.
And
she, against all... you should have listened to your mother, would have said, don't ever go with a stranger, which we always did. She popped right in that car and went. And they were fabulous. They entertained her. They took her to the most beautiful beaches in the world. They sent one of their homemakers, housekeepers with her, kept her under an umbrella. She said, they wouldn't even let me sit in the sun. It was considered vulgar. And that was the audience. They were family.
Sure. And, well, you were there, the audience's
and
mom,
we were
and
there.
They became your daughter's mom when she was abroad. That's pretty magical.
And
that's
audiences are still family because we're there, and they trust us, and they know us. It's just they don't have to listen every day at a certain time. They can go right on to our podcast.
Listen to your podcast.
It's by demand.
Absolutely wonderful. I am Jackie Tantillo. My guest is Joan Hamburg.
And you're listening to Should Have Listened to My Mother.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Jackie.
And now for something completely different. My next guest is not in the studio with me, unfortunately, but is going to join me over the phone. Have you ever thought about being an opera star or singer or soloist? Barbara of Seville, Nessun Dorma, Figaro, Figaro, Figaro. Have you ever imagined? Well, my next guest on Should Have Listened to My Mother has a little bit to tell us, or a lot to tell us, about that very subject. I'm Jackie Tantillo, and welcome to my podcast, Should Have Listened to My Mother. My second guest for today is a dear close friend. I'm so honored to be able to say a dear close friend is Christopher Nomura. Welcome, Christofferson.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Such a pleasure to have you here. Our families are very close. We've gone away on vacation a number of times. Very fortunate to do that. Yeah. But Christofferson has a very, very unique background. I've never met anyone like him. And this is what we're going to talk about a little bit in this next segment. Christofferson is a baritone. You say baritone operatic soloist? How do you refer to yourself? If you just say baritone?
Baritone singer, baritone vocalist.
Baritone vocalist.
Classical singer.
And has been singing since you were a wee lad.
Yes.
Right? You were born in Oakland, right? California, and you've been singing the San Francisco Boys. The Boys Choir of San Francisco started like age 6 years old.
That's right. My speaking of moms, my mom actually sort of tricked me into going to an audition by saying that she was going to take me on a little sightseeing trip to San Francisco one afternoon. I'll never forget it. It's crystal clear to me because I was so excited to go with her to Ghirardelli Square and Fisherman's Wharf. And she took a little detour. She went up to Pacific Heights to the Calvary Presbyterian Church where the San Francisco Boys Chorus was holding their annual auditions for boy sopranos to come try out for their chorus. And within a few minutes, I was standing in front of about 12 panelists listening to me. It's the honest to God's truth, listening to me sing the Star Spangled Banner, the national anthem, and Happy Birthday.
Because that was your repertoire, I'm assuming.
Well, I think what they wanted to do, I mean, they assumed that I knew those pieces. I guess it was one of those things you learned, right, when you were young. And fortunately, I did know those pieces, although my mother taught me a lot of songs. So so I could have sung much more. And I think and what ended up happening is they obviously took me, but the starting age wasn't supposed to be until 8 years old. But my mother really, really wanted me to be a part of this organization, and they took me in into the youngest group. Like I said, I was still a year and a half to 2 years younger than everyone else, but I had a very good ear, and I could sing in tune, and I probably had a very, very young sounding voice, very high treble soprano. Which I had already sort of trained with my mother's help. She always played the piano for me when I was a young kid, and she loved playing for me, Bach songs and hymns, because she played in the church choir, the organ. So that was my start.
But that was just at home, hanging out, singing with your mother. You never, did you have an idea that this was your destiny to go and, I mean, you had no idea, right?
Oh, gosh, no. I had no idea. I was doing something that I thoroughly loved. It felt very natural. Like I said, you know, standing in front of 12 people didn't faze me one bit.
Oh.
I was actually kind of surprised that people were asking me to sing songs.
My gosh.
And so my mother was sitting there in the back, and she was just, she would do that gesture, you know, stand up straight gesture that moms do, to make sure I had the proper
posture
that I looked okay. And I just sang to the panel, and I remember really enjoying it.
When I
continued on with the boys chorus, I really loved going to rehearsals. I really loved singing in concerts. And I thought that everyone would love doing that. And it was so odd when I would try to recruit my best friends, my best buddies, to come and join the boys' chorus. They would last for about a month and then suddenly quit. And I couldn't understand why. And they said, Chris, it's so boring.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Had they only
known. I know. And I... I absolutely could not understand that. And I would say to myself, well, it's not boring to me. I love it. So yeah. I was never swayed by peer pressure to play sports or, you know, do regular boy things.
Activities.
This was a very unusual path. I recognized it from a very early age. And my mother was a very central part of me dedicating my time, my energy, and my practice time, my weekends, my vacation times to singing.
Well, and if for our listeners that I met your mother on, I think, two occasions, and she's very demure. Japanese, your parents immigrated from Japan. But right. Mrs. Nomura, at least when I met her, she was very petite and immediately not demanded. There was so much respect that just walking up to her alone, she exuded this energy of this woman that has accomplished so much and so admirable that you could do nothing but just, you don't even want to hug her because I don't think that was proper culturally. But she just was fascinating. And there's so much to talk about your parents, the school that they started out in California, and how your dad built it, and the correlation of just the story of immigrants, and then how you, in 2015, made your musical Broadway debut in Allegiance in New York about the story of Japanese families in internment camps in California. I mean, this is like this incredible story that you've been able to live in real life. And it's really, really exciting. So you are now in this boys' choir. There's so many things I would love to talk about, so I'm just trying to make sure I don't lose my train of thought. You're in this boys' choir. You then you go and you sing at the White House, right? You were you've pretty much sung. You've sung all around the world. You've been in Asia. You've been in South America. You've been all over Europe, United States. Recently, right. We saw you last spring. We saw you on stage at Carnegie Hall. Celebrating Philip Glass, part of his 80th birthday celebration, along with the Pacific Symphony for the Passion of Ramakrishna. What are your aspirations, and where do you think your mother would see you at this point in your life?
Well, that's a great question. I still have aspirations to continue singing for as long as I can. The human voice, of course, starts to, depending, I guess, on how well you take care of your voice and how well you take care of your body and things, but there is a natural decline. I'm 54 now. I feel like, to be honest, Jackie, I feel like I'm really in the physical prime of my vocal life.
Wow,
right now. I feel
wonderful.
Great vocally. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason why I couldn't continue singing professionally for the next, hopefully, 10, 15 years, which brings me into my 70s, which is kind of hard to think about. But
yeah, that's crazy.
In terms of, yeah, I know. In terms of my total life aspiration, I would certainly love to start maybe passing the gifts that I've been able to nurture to the next generation of singers. I feel it's really important for us as artists, those of us who've had the fortune of singing on the stage, to be able to share our knowledge and our experience and to the next generation of singers who are coming up, and to help them share the dream that I've been able to have for the last 30 plus years of professional singing. And as far as my mother, and if I were to think of my mother looking down from the heavens, she would absolutely want for me to do that as well. You know, my mother and my father, as you mentioned, were dedicated to the younger people of the world. They started a preschool out in Richmond, California,
That's
starting
still
at 2 years old.
A working school now and growing.
Yes, yes, still, exactly, still thriving today. But their whole life's work was really dedicated to children. And my mother in particular, who started it from the basement of our house, would have the neighborhood kids come to the house, and she would play music, as you can imagine, play the piano, and have kids sing in circles. I remember being in that group when I was 2, 3, 4 years old, singing with the neighborhood kids. And I don't even think she even charged money to have kids come. She just wanted kids to come to the house. She wasn't a babysitter. She never considered herself a daycare center. She really felt like she was part of a school. And the reason why I mentioned school is she believed that children, even as young as 2 years old, could learn. And whether it was learn music, whether it was learn Japanese words, whether it was learning how to dance, how to throw rocks. I mean, she was a woman that believed that children could learn to do anything at a very, very young age. And so you can understand why she brought me to that audition at 6 years old, because she never felt like there should be any age restrictions whatsoever to what children could do. And so going to the boys' chorus at such an early age really did give me an incredible foundation for the career that I've been so fortunate to have. And interestingly enough, a lot of colleagues that I run into, particularly male colleagues who have had long careers, also started either in a boys' chorus or a boys' choir or a church choir, singing at young ages. So it's fascinating to me, and I think that there is a reason, that there are lots of reasons why those of us who've had these careers have been able to attribute it to our early start.
It's an amazing lessons that she has taught you for so many reasons, because just watching you perform at Carnegie, the discipline that you have is remarkable, and how you show up prepared for your job or your, because you also are a baseball coach, a very good one. You show up prepared, and starting at such a young age, that's really hard. And I can understand why your friends weren't interested in it, because it takes a lot of work and a lot of discipline, and you have to be smart and you have to love what you do. That's really important. Your mother loved the aspect of learning and music and helping others.
Yeah.
And that's unusual.
Yeah.
Not everyone has that opportunity to be exposed to that at such a young age. And I know you and your sisters are phenomenal performers, professionals. Some of us are really lucky to have that inspiration and guidance, because that sets our bar really, really high.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, Jackie. From the day, from as early as I can remember, sitting in the car, driving from Oakland to San Francisco with her, which was probably a nice hour and a half drive, listening to classical music, of course, KQED in San Francisco, we would talk about how important it is to be prepared, how important it is to practice, how important it was to put your best effort forward and not to fall short of it. She was very much a believer in that, and 110%. That's all I heard every car ride. 110%. Don't just go 90. Don't go 75. Don't go 50. 110%. And I do take that with me to every performance, every concert. Of course, there will be concerts where sometimes it feels like I fell short of that. I'll be very honest. I would be lying if I said it never fell under 100%. Whether it was because of personal issues I had to go through, whether it was because of my health, maybe not feeling well and just barely being able to get through a concert, But 110%, that was my mother's motto.
That is it sounds just like your mother.
It does, right?
Oh,
it really
my gosh,
does.
Her voice.
And as you know, Jackie, she was a very driven woman. She was brought up in Japan during a time when women's opportunities were few. They weren't given their fair share of opportunities that men were. And she was raised by a woman herself, her mother, who was fierce, absolutely fierce in how she believed women's roles in Japan would change and would need to change in order for that country to grow and survive. And so her parents, particularly her mother, but also her father, who started a high school for women, a private high school to help them raise themselves educationally and to, enter the job force professionally as well-respected, human beings on this earth. Her parents gave her a structure and a foundation of just incredible strength. If I can share this with you in terms of the strength of my mother was from her mother. And how her mother really started her life on never falling short, always pursuing your dream, do what you love to do. For her, it was educating children. For her, it was her Christian belief, fierce Christian belief in, a country that is predominantly Buddhist or Shinto, as you know. 99%, and yet her mother was also Christian during a time when anything considered Western belief was treason, and yet she played on her little organ, air organ, Christian hymns through World War II and a period where of course, the United States was the enemy. And my mother took that, and she brought that spirit and that fight to America. And, that's where I got my start.
So are you who you are because of your mother or in spite of your mother?
Oh, there is no question. I'm pretty sure you can
I know the answer.
It's because of my mother. I mean, she... there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her strength and her, her love for us as children. But she never wanted us to think. I will say this for both of my parents. They never wanted us to think of ourselves as minorities. They never wanted us to ask for a handout. They wanted us to fight for ourselves and earn it and deserve it. And I was very lucky to be raised in a family that never accepted excuses. And so I hope to this day that I can pass that along to my children, of course, and that their needs are met only by their work, their hard work and determination.
It's really important that as parents, I mean, people say it's not easy, but sometimes it is easy and sometimes it's really stinky, especially when the disciplining has to come into play. But it's really important. And I guess if you simplify things, then everything, the tree, the branches will spread out. Because if you start with the proper roots, then hopefully our children will grow into and keep that progression of what the proper ideals and morals are, right, in life. If we start with
correct.
The right foundation and we keep it simple and we send them in a direction that, they have to make mistakes. I've never been a mom before. My mom had never been a mom before, and I'm the youngest of seven, and I'm sure she was learning the whole way through that experience, because that was definitely challenging.
Absolutely. And,
you know, it's not always easy, but there are times when I'm like, oh, man, I certainly should have listened to my mother because she was brilliant. So many wonderful ideas. And not just stuff about my career, but about in life, about certain things you have to learn, let things go because you realize that they're not that important. You know, they may seem important at that time and moment, but what is your mother's first name? I should have asked you this earlier. I forget.
Right. Well, it's very appropriate, actually. Believe it or not, her first name is Faith.
Oh, Faith, no more.
She was named Faith. And imagine, in Japan, she was named Faith. Wow. Her Japanese name was Yoko. Faith Yoko Ogihara was her given
birth name.
Christian name. Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. So can you, I just want people to get a little, tell me one of your favorite performances. I know you're a total Johann Sebastian Bach nut. Could you tell us the story of your little boy, your younger twins, the story that they told you when they came home from school one day about?
Oh, yes. It was so funny. I think they were probably in first or second grade, and they came home from school here in Maplewood, and they were very happy to report that they had learned, they had spent the morning learning about my friend, J.S. Bach. And I had the biggest smile on my face because I do regard my favorite composers as friends because I sing their music all the time, and whenever I do, it just fills me up, just like it would fill me up to be spending time with my friends. J.S. Bach is definitely one of my favorite composers. In terms of performances, you know, I'm asked that question a lot, and it's very funny. I have a really short memory of my performances. I'm 110% taking a phrase from my mom. I'm 110% invested in the performance that I'm doing that very day or that week, and then I have to move on. And I know it's maybe sounds like a cop out, but I you know, in terms of favorite performances, I mean, it really is kind of maybe what I just did, or because I do feel like every performance is really, really special for different reasons. I would say that probably one of my favorite performances was definitely singing at Carnegie Hall this past couple months ago. Like you said, singing the music of Philip Glass and the Passion of Ramakrishna. It was special, not just, of course, being in that hall, but the piece of music, which is dedicated to a religious leader that I think shares a lot of the strength that even my mother, if we want to go so far as to say that my mother had.
It's full circle.
The
work of singing and the...
Amazing. Exactly, which was really about, you know, a man who lived his life through very, very fierce strength, spiritual strength, and how we need to take care of our people, how we need to take care of each other. And it was a great piece to do. It was in an incredible venue. It's a piece that I've performed. It's part of my life's work because he wrote it for me in 2006, so I'm very dedicated to the piece. I'm the only baritone that has sung that role, and so I had a lot invested in it to perform at its highest level in New York City in front of my friends like you, so you and your family, which was so enjoyable, and of course my family. So it was definitely by far one of the highlights, along with, of course, singing on Broadway. That was so much fun, performing multiple times with the likes of Lea Salonga and Tale Leung, and I could go on and on with my wonderful colleagues, and of course George Takei, who is an incredible man with again great strength. I'm so proud to be a Japanese American with George Takei. So that was also a tremendous highlight for me.
Yeah, and you may be back on Broadway doing something with some of these same performers in the future, right? Allegiance is traveling around the country.
Yes, it is, and it's doing very well. It's sending, of course, it's sending a very strong message about immigration and how we just absolutely cannot allow this to happen again. And of course, we're in the middle of that fight, as we all know. So
apropos.
Yes, performances are happening all over. I think they're getting ready to perform it right now in California, in El Cerrito, California, which is, interestingly enough, where my mother started her school, in El Cerrito. And it will be going to Hawaii and onward and onward. So it's doing very well.
So in honor of faith, Nomura, I thank you, Christopher Nomura. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been really wonderful. I've heard some of these stories before, but it's just so nice to share them. I'm Jackie Tantillo, and you've been listening to Should Have Listened to My Mother. Thank you again, Christopher.
Thank you, Jackie. Pleasure.
Thanks again for listening as we take a look back to episode number one of this podcast, Should Have Listened to My Mother. You can subscribe or share wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Jackie Tantillo, and we will see you next week with another new episode of Should Have Listened to My Mother. Thanks for listening.